This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to The Zoomer Week in Review, brought to you by CARP, fighting against ageism in the workplace and the marketplace. Find out more at carp.ca.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Zoomer Week in Review, all things Zoomer worldwide. I'm Libby Znaimer. It's Easter Sunday, a good time to take stock of the state of religious faith in Canada. And the Trudeau government loudly touted its cutoff of military exports to Israel. But it turns out Canada is far more dependent on Israeli weapons systems than the opposite. I talked to Israel's ambassador to Canada. But first, here are your Zoomer headlines from around the world. Two former officials with a veterans home in Massachusetts, where at least 76 people died in one of America's worst COVID outbreaks in a long-term care home, settled their criminal case this week without having to go to jail. It was the first criminal case in the country against anyone connected to nursing home deaths during the pandemic. The defense argued it happened in the early days when the dangers of the disease were poorly understood and the facility was hamstrung by a lack of staffing. Here at home, just 2 weeks ago, class action lawsuits against six of Ontario's largest for-profit long-term care companies claiming gross negligence have been given the green light to proceed. A 105-year-old eclipse chaser is about to add number 13 to his list next month. Laverne Beiser from Texas witnessed his first eclipse in 1963 and has photographed all of them. He says they're all very pretty, but what makes April so special is that it will happen right in his backyard without having to travel. His advice to viewers, wear the special glasses and watch the whole thing. Protein has become the new buzzword in diets, and now a new study confirms that a diet rich in protein, especially plant protein, may keep women healthier as they age. Researchers found that each 3% increase in the amount of plant protein consumed was associated with a 38% higher likelihood of staying healthy as women got older. The recommended amount for middle-aged women is 5 to 6 ounces of protein a day, and it can be found in foods like lentils, green peas, spinach, and broccoli. 142 years after construction began, there is finally a completion date for Barcelona's famed Sagrada Familia Church. It will be finished in 2 years when it will become the world's largest church. When it's complete, the Tower of Jesus Christ will stand 566 feet high and feature a 56-foot-tall cross. Construction began in 1882 under the renowned architect Antoni Gaudi. Legendary American sculptor Richard Serra has died at the age of 85. You've likely seen his impressive large-scale sculpture at Toronto Pearson Airport called Tilted Spheres. In 2004, the piece had to be installed before the roof and walls were completed on Terminal 1 at Pearson. Its four steel fins are memorable to walk through because of their echo effect. Tilted Spheres also gained international recognition when the Museum of Modern Art featured photos of the work in its exhibition catalog in 2007. I'm Libby Znaimer, and those are your Zoomer headlines from around the world. It's Easter Sunday, and it's likely that family dinners and Easter egg hunts outstrip church attendance as a way to mark the holiday. Formal religious observance has been declining for years in our country, though about half the population still believe in God. And many people are closely attached to their religion, but do not have faith in a higher power. I talked with Dr. Jack Jedwab about the state of our spirituality. So it's Easter, And this used to be a very Christian country, but it no longer is.
Right. We've seen, first of all, a substantial diversification in terms of our population, which now identifies with diverse faiths. So we're more than what we were in Confederation, where we described ourselves as a more or less a Christian country. And we're seeing fewer people saying they believe in God, with about half the population saying they do that, either strongly, one-third, or somewhat, one-fifth. So persistent change in that regard, and in the direction of less adherence to religious faith and the things that accompany it.
Back in 2011, two-thirds of the population said that they affiliate with a Christian denomination, and that is down to just over half in a very short time.
And the trending in that regard, when you look at that distribution of responses by age cohort that sees the younger cohorts in our census even less inclined to identify with a religious group, suggests that we're going to head to a situation where religious affiliation becomes less salient to our Canadian population as it gets older.
It's Easter Sunday, and I would imagine that there will be a lot of Easter egg hunts and family dinners and church attendance not so much.
Yeah, very likely. What we're seeing also is the sort of cultural defining of things that we traditionally consider religion. For example, whether it's Easter or Christmas, both of which are rooted in religious traditions, Christian religious traditions, we're almost seeing people designate them as cultural. And the activities associated with them are part of one's culture, and get where the religious dimension gets removed on some level.
You have a very fascinating concept called decoupling, which means that people believe in God, but it is not connected to a sense of attachment to their religion.
A lot of people will say that they believe in God, and that can manifest itself in different ways, but it does not mean that they're going to attend church or synagogue or the mosque to a degree that accompanies the extent to which they say they believe in God. So that's why I suggest there's some decoupling.
So people are identifying with a culture as opposed to a religious practice, right?
Yeah. So here in my home province of Quebec, you'll get a lot of people who will wear crosses, and they won't necessarily assign religious importance to it. It's more of a cultural thing for them. And you know, we have a large cross on the sort of mountain here that we call Mount Royal, and that's quite visible. And people will not see that as much of a religious reference, even though certainly that was the intention of it when it was built on that hill overlooking our city.
Back to this business about identifying with your religion but not believing in God, are there any religions where that is more common, or is it the same throughout?
What I see in terms of the breakdown that we've done in the survey we conducted, at least the most recent one, was variations in the extent to which people in each of these denominations say they believed in God. So people identifying as Catholic were less likely to say they believed in God than did people who were Protestant, and people who were Muslim were more inclined, considerably more so, than the other groups surveyed to say they believed in God. And people who defined as Jewish were sort of somewhere in the middle of this. Of this pack, so to speak. What we also did look at was our neighbors to the south, that is our American friends and family and colleagues and so forth, and there's a much higher level of adherence to religion and belief in God in the United States than there is in Canada, even though recent polling is showing some trending reflecting a diminishing in that country as well of belief in God and attachment to religion, though not in the same level as is the case in Canada.
Does this mean, are we moving to become a post-religious society? Any kind of conclusion?
Here in these pluralistic societies where there's more mixing and there's more encounter of between people of different faiths, and where increasingly science over faith is the way people are in this part of the planet being asked to interpret things, even though there are a lot of scholars that will look at the relationship between science and faith and try to adapt accordingly or adjust accordingly. We'll have to see what type of adjustments those people who are the heads of our various religious groupings make to try to sustain the people that are still on side in terms of what they would like the belief system to be and what changes they'll make going forward if they want to reach younger people who seem to be veering away increasingly from one period to the next from the sort of customary things that are associated with religion, including belief in God.
Thank you very much, and happy long weekend, whatever that means to you.
Exactly, you too. Take care.
That was Dr. Jack Jedwa, president of the Association for Canadian Studies. I'm Libby Znaimer, and this is the Zoomer Week in Review. Coming up, I talk to the Israeli ambassador to Canada about the Liberal government's weapons embargo on his country.
You're listening to the Zoomer Week in Review, brought to you by CARP, Canada's largest and most influential association fighting for the interests of Canadians as we age. Find out more at carp.ca.
Last week, Melanie Joly, Canada's foreign minister, announced an arms embargo on Israel. But it turns out Canada has spent much more, over $1 billion in recent years, on Israeli weapons systems, and they are being used to protect Canadian pilots, fighters, and naval combatants around the world. I spoke with Israel's ambassador to Canada, Ido Moed.
On the face of it, we are disappointed. We are trying to understand exactly what the message is. I'm not sure that it's very clear. Past few months, which actually increased political pressure on Israel.
I'd like to drill down a bit on this weapons issue. And in the last year, we had figures available. I mean, Canada only exported about $21 million worth of military goods. We had heard that before this announcement related to this motion last week that Canada was suspending further permits, and there were no further permits. So how significant would that be for Israel from a practical point of view?
I won't go into details on the actual issues that are between us and Canada as well. That's what we've said, and we'll repeat saying. We think that during this time of war, when Israel is trying to defend its citizens against this onslaught of terrorism, which continues as we speak, rockets are still fired from the Gaza Strip into Israel, from the north into Israel. Terrorist attacks are being perpetrated by terrorists throughout the country. We have to be prepared, and we have to do that.
On the other hand, while Canada exported $21 million, Canada has purchased more than $1 billion from Israel over the last number of years. Is there any thought that Israel might retaliate or anything like that?
So again, I'll just repeat saying that we are waiting to have clarification about the message and the decision that was taken, and we are weighing our options when it comes to our bilateral relations and the reciprocity and all of that. I mean, we have to bear in mind, we are first and foremost objective at the moment is to fight off this horrendous attack of Hamas and to release the 134 hostages. This is our most important task at the moment. This is the only thing that really occupies the heads of the Israeli government at this point in time. I assure you that we are weighing our options when it comes to the bilateral aspect of this trade as well. We need to work together. We need each other. We know that our collaboration has proven to be very effective in the past, and it should continue to be able to produce those products and systems that will help enhance our security and our defenses. So it's a mutual interest, absolutely.
Your reaction to the massive protests, to the targeting of Jewish communities, and to some of the messages which are a barely veiled call for the destruction of Israel, and it's here and around the world.
The rise of anti-Semitism in Canada is mind-boggling, and it's horrendous. Jewish community feels abandoned in many ways. And the violence that has erupted in some places and the horrific expressions of anti-Semitism have hurt many, young and old, all around the country. So this is something to think about. There are also some phenomena of Islamophobia, I'm sure. We see the aggressive nature of the demonstrations. We see the slogans. We hear them from the river to the sea. I'm sure that many people who are chanting have no idea that it actually means the eradication of the state of Israel and for the annihilation of the Jewish people. This is the time for leadership, be it religious or political or whatever, to say, let's draw a line between whatever criticism we have and between hatred, because the hatred that is spread right now is scary. I think it's scary to many people in the Jewish community. And it's scary also for other citizens, because it is not something that belongs in a free and tolerant society and a democracy like ours.
But even Israel's staunchest allies, the United States, have said that the response to the war is not proportional.
We are fighting the most complicated urban warfare ever fought anywhere around the world. We are fighting against a monster that's like a cancerous organism instilled itself among civilian population, hiding behind civilians, making them human shields, and stating out loud that they will be hiding in tunnels and the United Nations will be responsible for their civilian population's protection. We understand fully that there is damage and there are casualties and there are babies, there are families. We acknowledge that. We know that every victim, any person's life is one too many. We know that. Is it Israeli or Palestinian? But we will not let these terrorists continue their attack against us, because there is no other way. They will continue to kill otherwise, unless we kill them.
Ambassador Ido Moed, thank you very much. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
That was Israel's ambassador to Canada, Ido Moed. And that brings us to the end of this week's edition of the Zoomer Week in Review. I'm Libby Znaimer. Thanks for joining me today. Be sure to come back next week to stay up to date with all things Zoomer worldwide.
Zoomer Week in Review is produced by Zeev Hadi, Christine Ross, and Paul Thomas. With technical production by Ian Robertson. Executive producer Moses Znaimer. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.